The Manitoba Association of Christian Homeschools would like to thank the Learning House for sponsoring this recording.
Alrighty, quick note on that. It is just me here today. That's why I'm the one handing out all those lovely handouts. If you didn't get one, you can come see me at the very end and I will be sure to get you some there. But just because of weather, could not get my lovely office manager, Miss Ashley, to come out here with us. But welcome, everybody. Thank you for showing up despite the weather. So today we're going to talk about vision therapy and common symptoms to look for. I got that lovely introduction, and so I will not repeat myself there. And so we're going to start off with just a quick history as well as some definitions. That way we can all be on the same page right before we sort of get into the body of our lecture today. And so approximately 1 in 4 school-aged children have signs or symptoms of binocular vision dysfunction. Binocular vision refers to having 2 eyes, and a dysfunction in that just means that there's a bit of a mismatch between how those eyes are functioning together. This is separate from the health and the structure of our eyes, which gets checked in a routine eye exam. Today, we're going to talk about sort of what happens in a separate assessment to really look at all these different types of binocular function. And so a quick definition here, super duper important, visual acuity versus vision. Oftentimes, these two get sort of confused or used interchangeably. However, they have 2 very distinct definitions. Visual acuity, or sight, that is the measure of how clearly we're able to see things. So when you go in for your eye exam, this is the test that they do when they ask you to look down the room, read all those teeny tiny letters. How small can you do it? Yes, you can squint them through. Sure. That's what visual acuity is measuring. That's your sight. On the opposite hand here, we have vision, which does include our visual acuity, but vision is how you use the eyes, how you interpret what you see, how you act on what you're seeing. And so this involves not only your eyes, but your brain as well. Just like you can have normal body temperature and still feel sick, you can have perfect or wonderful visual acuity sight. Some of you may know it as 20/20 vision. So you can still have perfect visual acuity and still have vision problems. Okay, so that's a very important thing moving forward here in our lecture. And so now a brief introduction to what vision therapy is. The basis of vision therapy relies on the fact that as humans, we need to learn to use our visual system. We do most of our growing, most of our learning when we're children. That's not to say that we can't learn and grow and learn new things when we're adults, but most of it is done when we're children. And all of that to say is that our vision, our visual system, has the ability to develop, to change over time. It's not a one and done sort of system there. And so what is really vision therapy? What do these programs look like? What do the sessions look like? So each program is designed for the individual based off of their needs, based off of their concerns and their goals. Each session is about an hour long. They happen in office one-on-one between the child or the patient and the vision therapist or the doctor. They happen every 2 to 3 weeks in office. And then between sessions, we send you home with activities, with exercises that we expect you to be done about 5 times a week. Usually takes about 20 to 30 minutes. And so the goals of vision therapy are just to sort of ingrain, to solidify those fundamental visual skills. We want to teach the brain how to use the vision, how to use the visual system more effortlessly, more effectively. And so in order to get results, it is sort of a dedication to the program. Vision therapy is not a passive form of therapy. Okay, once you commit to doing the vision therapy, in order to get results, to see results, you really have to commit to the program and put in the work. Any questions so far, just based off of those definitions, any questions on vision therapy before we really jump into the body of our lecture? Yes. An optometrist, when they do their regular eye exam, are going to look for more of those gross abnormalities. So any of these 6 that really stick out like a sore thumb, today we're going to talk about more of sort of those hidden gems that are hiding within each child. Something that may not be obvious, that the child may have learned how to sort of adapt and hide for themselves or cope for themselves. So this right here, binocular vision assessment, that's going to be a separate session from a routine eye exam in order to really sort of pinpoint what's going on in there. Perfect question. Anybody else? Yes. So that's a very good question there. The assessment, at least from our clinic, from our perspective, the assessment itself takes about an hour. Okay. And then through that, we test all three or all six of these that we're about to talk about today. And then we really pinpoint what it is that's going on with the visual system for that individual. And then based on that, we will make our recommendations. It can range from a mild case anywhere between maybe 5 to 10 sessions. On very severe cases that we've seen, we might be thinking more 25 to 30 sessions. So it really depends, one, on what we're seeing and also sort of what the goals for the parent are, what the goals for the child may be too at the end of vision therapy. Anything else? All righty. So right here, we see our big six. These are our big six binocular vision dysfunctions. So I'm going to go through a definition of each. We'll try and demonstrate some of these as well. And then I've also gone ahead and highlighted some of the big red flags that we see with each of these. That's not to say that they are the only symptoms that come up, but the red ones are the ones that I'm going to talk about today, and usually the ones that parents, teachers, referring doctors will sort of write down and tell us about when they come see us. So the first one here are our eye movements. Then we have focusing, our eye teaming, our perceptual abilities, and then we're going to talk about eye turns, also known as wandering eyes, as well as our lazy eyes at the end right there. All righty. So first, starting off with our ocular motor dysfunction. So this is a dysfunction in our eye tracking abilities. This involves two types of movements, first being our hirsutes, or our smooth eye movements, and then the second being our saccades, our jumping eye movements. So if we think about, let's say, hockey, a pursuit or a smooth movement would be following the puck down the ice, whereas a saccade movement would be looking around, tracking between each player. So not only are these eye tracking, these eye movement abilities really important when it comes to sports, but super duper important when we think about reading. Hopefully this video will play for us. Let's see if it does. Okay, there we go. Seems to be working-ish. Yes, wonderful. Okay, so on the right here is our normal average reader, exactly what we expect. We are going word by word, line by line, nice and smooth, top to bottom. On the left there is what our reader who has an ocular motor dysfunction might look like. So as you can see on the left, we're sort of skipping letters, skipping around our lines, having to track backwards to find our spot, and overall, just a much slower reader. So of course, when we think about red flags for our tracking disorders, it's going to be skipping words, skipping lines, of course, right? Everything that we're seeing here in this video. But another one here that I always like to highlight for parents is doesn't like to read. Now, doesn't like to read, of course, goes beyond sort of our child that may be a little bit more active, or the child that just isn't really a book lover because those exist out there. They do. Doesn't like to read really refers to that child who will really fight you and just sort of really try not to have to read. And even if you get them seated, okay, the book is in front of them, you say, please go and read. They might just flat out refuse to read for you. And if you think about it from their perspective, they're making all of those eye movements. That can be really exhausting for the eyes, really exhausting for the brain. And then usually when you're asking someone to read, you're not asking them, oh yeah, just read the words, read the letters, it's fine. No, we're asking them to read and understand, to gain information from what they're reading. And when we're doing all of these eye movements, it's frustrating, it's exhausting, and then now it's confusing. So if you think about it from their perspective, you can kind of understand why they might try to avoid reading in that sense. And then just one more here that I always sometimes like to highlight is word reversals. So when we're making those quick eye movements and tracking backwards, if we're reading really quickly, we might say a word backwards, we might read it backwards, things like that. And so when we think about vision therapy and treating these ocular motor dysfunctions. We always train each eye individually first. Okay, so we like to make sure that each eye is able to do those smooth movements, those jumping eye movements, and then we coordinate those movements together. Okay, and we do that by using different workbooks, different charts, different fun activities, obviously, for our really young ones to keep them nice and engaged, because sometimes doing mazes, doing crosswords, they don't really love that all the time. So we get some fun games for them, of course. Any questions so far for our ocular motor or tracking? Otherwise, we'll keep sort of going through each one here. So our next one here, number two, is our accommodative disorders. These are our focusing disorders. So focusing, bringing something up close, getting it nice, clear, and in focus. There are three types of accommodative disorders. The first one being accommodative insufficiency or too little. So if we bring the book in front of us, we're not able to make it clear. It's going to be blurry for us. The second type is accommodative excess or too much. So once we sort of engage our focusing system, it sort of goes into overdrive. It doesn't know where to stop. So we can get that book nice and clear, but slowly but surely it'll be closer and closer and closer. So if you ever see a child or someone taking a test, they're first seated nice and proper, and then somehow they'll just sort of, you know, bring their way all the way, nose into book. That might be a sign of accommodative excess there. And then the last one here we have is accommodative infacility or too slow. So they have the ability to make things close, nice and clear, but it might just be a little bit slower, might be a little bit delayed. And this type also tends to fatigue a little bit more easily here. So this right here is a video of one of the tests that we do during our assessment. That right there is a flipper that you saw. So what we do is that we go on each side, hence the name flipper, and we see how quickly you're able to make it clear. Are you able to make it clear at all? I am going to, see, this is the problem with doing this by myself here. Is I'm going to put this microphone down for a quick second and I'm going to hand out some flippers. That way we can all sort of see what it looks like. I will hand them out and then I just ask you to pass them over to the person next to you. Okay. Go either to the left or to the right of your face, and then your nose is going to go in between, and you're going to flip on either side there. Hopefully you heard me because I didn't have my microphone. Alrighty, so once you flip it, hand it over to the next person beside you. On one side, it's going to simulate what accommodative insufficiency is. So it's going to be blurry. You're not going to be able to make anything clear. If you flip it over to the other side, that's going to simulate accommodative excess. So the only time it'll be clear is if you're sort of in that 15 centimeter range in front of you. And then when you flip, that's the test. Sorry, I went black there. But that's the test of facility. So how quickly can you do it? How easily can you do it? Can you do it for a long period of time there? Alrighty, so we'll take one more look. So that's the flipper here. And then one side, okay, can we make it clear? Can we make it clear near the end of the video? You'll see that it gets a little bit slower. So that's sort of testing our endurance with our focusing system. So of course, when we think about focus, the number one symptom, the number one red flag is going to be, of course, blurry vision. But the other one I like to highlight here that we see in all three types of focusing disorders is slow copying from the board. If you can imagine looking up close, looking far away, engaging your focusing system up close, and then having to relax it to look far away, and doing that back and forth, if you're having a hard time making the letters, the numbers clear up close, if you're having a hard time because your focusing system is on overdrive to then relax and look far away again to make those ones clear, and then if the endurance or you're just slower at it, you're going to be, it's going to be harder to sort of take those notes in class, slower copying. which is something that we really want to look for, especially for our older children that were maybe thinking about, you know, high school, where the demand for taking notes, copying is much higher. And even if we're thinking more long-term for university, where that demand is really much higher. And so in vision therapy, we use specialized lenses. We use a series of those flippers that you have going around there to sort of build on one another. Because as a child, we hope and we want their focusing system to be nice and strong, nice and flexible. And so we use these specialized lenses and other techniques and things like that to really build on the strength and the stamina of that focusing system. Because really, no child should be put in reading glasses, which, looking around, some of you are in glasses. Maybe you're familiar with what a pair of readers looks like. Okay, any questions on our focusing disorders here? If you are the last person with the flipper, feel free to just hold on to it. I will collect them at the very end. Okay, let's move on to number three here, our vergence disorders. So this is our eye teaming dysfunctions. So specifically how our eyes work together when moving in opposite directions. So we think about looking to the right. I will do your right for simplicity. When we look to the right, both of our eyes are moving to the right. When we look to the left, both of our eyes are looking to the left. Number one here, convergence. So this is moving our eyes inwards, up close towards our nose. So our right eye is moving to the left, our left eye moving to the right. And so same movement, but opposite direction. And then to contrast that, we have our divergence. So going from inwards back out to parallel. And so this right here is a nice image of this young girl. This is not a patient of ours. This is a lovely stock image from Google. Thank you, Google. This is her right here. She is converging. So both eyes are pointed inwards towards our nose. They're mirroring one another. And more importantly, just like when we talked about our focusing system, we want to know how long she can do this for. What's her stamina like? Right? Because when we think about our eye teaming, when we think about those red flags, those symptoms, oftentimes they're going to be intermittent. Our eyes can really work together for a certain period of time, and then they eventually will just sort of give up. They'll be done working together. So we can really, really push those eyes for most of the day, and that can sometimes cause some eye strain. Eye strain can then lead to headaches. And then oftentimes we can also get blurry vision even, or even double vision. Has anybody here ever experienced double vision? Don't be shy, we will not judge. I see double vision all the time, or I can make myself see double. Okay, I am going to hand out another set of flippers. Yes, we brought a whole bunch. Yes, I thought this would be easier if I had someone else with me. So if you've never experienced double vision, I'm gonna hand these out. You're gonna do the exact same thing. Thank you so much. Thank you to Jessica. She's going to hand that out. It doesn't matter which side you use here. That will be double vision for you. Double vision, if you've never experienced it, can be very disorienting, can really cause you some eye strain, can make those headaches much worse. And so Jessica will be so kind as to hand those out. Lovely. I'll take those back. All righty. And so how do we look at this when we look at vision therapy here? So we use special types of lenses. We use flippers just like that. They have special lenses in them known as prism. So if you've ever known someone who has had double vision and no longer sees double vision, it might be because their glasses have prism in there to help them not see double, which is excellent. And again, we're going to work sort of on that stamina, on that endurance to be able to make those eyes work together for a longer period of time. We work on keeping the eyes in, and we also work on keeping the eyes out because we can have a deficiency or a dysfunction in either the convergence, bringing the eyes in, or the divergence, keeping the eyes out. Okay, lovely midpoint check-in here. I'm going to grab a water, but does anybody have a question on any of the first three binocular vision dysfunctions that we talked about? Our eye tracking movements, our focusing, or our eye teaming at all? Yes.
Thank you.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. We should definitely talk afterwards. But certainly vision therapy, I will say, is, how do I say this in the nice way so that people don't get upset? We are often the last people that see the patient. Patients who have had sort of these long-standing visual symptoms, for some reason, we are the last people that gets to see them. Usually for long-standing double vision, you know, if they've had concussions even, sometimes they'll go through physical therapy, vestibular therapy, occupational therapy, and then 20 years down the road, someone has finally said, oh, have you tried vision therapy? And then they get to see us and we're like, yeah, of course we can help you. We've been here the whole time. I'm sorry that it took so long to find our door, but we're here. And so we have been here for many, many years, and we love doing sort of conferences like this. That way we can get the word out. That way, maybe if you aren't the one who is having some of these issues, if someone in your life brings them up to you, hopefully it rings a bell to come back here and to talk to us. Yes, in the back. That is also true, is that there's just not as many of us in terms of specialists that will say have a fellowship behind them. There's about 30 in Canada. Many other people are working towards their fellowship, but they're just not as easily sort of found. When you do a quick Google search, it'll sort of be limited. I think even in Manitoba here, I think there's maybe two or three of us here that are fellowship trained and accredited in that sense there. Yes, and every office is going to do vision therapy a little bit differently. So some people believe that you should go in every single week to do it. Our philosophy is more along the lines of every 2 to 3 weeks, because we know that life gets in the way. Vision therapy is not the only thing going on at the time. And so we really like you to take those activities home, get used to them, come back, be able to tell us what worked, what didn't work, what was easy, what was hard. 1 week, 6 days essentially between each session is not enough for us to know if you know what you're doing or if you've just sort of told us a little fib that, yeah, I practiced. It's like, well, did you? Because you were at a hockey tournament all week. How'd you practice? The other thing is also, I will just throw it out there right now, vision therapy is not typically covered, which is the sad thing. Even with our concussion patients, they are usually typically only covered for physical therapy. When, if you think about what happens if you've had a really bad concussion, it's usually a lot more therapy than just the physical therapy that happens. But wonderful. Any other questions at all? Yes. What type of specialist did you see? An ophthalmologist? To HSCs. Oh, Dr. Shekin. Yes. Yes. So ophthalmologists are the med school surgeon types that we deal with. They're the ones that are going to see you for all the eye diseases, glaucoma, macular degeneration, things like that. We are the optometrist, very different lettering there, but important distinction. So ophthalmology, and we'll talk about it sort of actually in our next one. They don't always love to send people to see us for vision therapy because they are the surgeons and surgeons like to cut. We are the optometrists. We do not cut, and so we do not like to necessarily recommend cutting. And that's sort of our perspectives. We have certain ophthalmologists that work really well with us and who are easily will say, yeah, go see them first before you come see us. But sometimes there is a little bit of that pushback between ophthalmology and optometry, especially when it comes to vision therapy or even any of these other specializations within optometry. But if you have questions, come up and talk to me afterwards. We can certainly talk about that. Anything else before we keep going? And if something does come up, just hold on to it. This will not be the last time I ask you if you have questions. So moving on to our visual information processing disorders. This is how the brain interprets what it is that we're seeing. This is separate, and it is not the same thing as dyslexia. Dyslexia has to be diagnosed by a psychologist. Oftentimes we get referrals or we get questions about dyslexia. So if there is a true concern for that, we generally recommend that you talk to your family doctor or your pediatrician in order to get in to go see a psychologist to get that formal diagnosis. In terms of management of dyslexia, I am not a master of dyslexia because it is not my specialty, but I'll just comment a little bit that management usually involves a whole team of specialists that can include a speech and language therapist, can actually involve a vision therapist. But as optometrists ourselves, we are just not able to make that formal diagnosis for you. So if you are looking for that, we generally recommend that you go see your GP or your pediatrician to get seen by the proper eyes there. And so moving on with our visual information processing disorders, there is a whole long list of them, but we will only go through sort of our top three that I've sort of pulled out. There's about 10 to 12, depending on how you like to categorize them, but I'm going to talk about three today that we certainly see when it comes to our younger children. And younger children, I'm going to talk more about under 10 right now. And so our first one here is laterality and directionality. So laterality refers to oneself. So this is my right arm. This is my left leg. Directionality refers to others, other people, other objects, other perspectives. Okay. So this is my right arm. I know that your right arm is going to be on the opposite side. So that's directionality. The chair is to the left of the table. To get to the front from your perspective in the back, you need to turn right, walk down the hall, turn to the left. That's sort of what we're thinking about when we look at laterality and directionality. And so, of course, red flag symptoms here are going to be confusing our lefts and our rights. But the one that I really want to highlight here is number and letter reversals, especially past the age of 7. Okay, so when we're first learning to spell, first learning how to write, if our B's and D's get flip-flopped, if our 3's are starting to look like capital E's, that is A-okay. Even when they're 7 years old, totally, totally normal. It's when they're 8 and plus that we sort of say, oh, if it's still happening, not always the best sign. We might be a little bit concerned for some of these laterality, directionality, the visual information processing disorders. We might want to get that flagged and sort of checked out. Our next sort of subset here is our visual analysis skills. So this involves our recognition, our manipulation, our memory. So if I have my water bottle here, okay, everybody can see it, lovely. If I flip it upside down, if I manipulate it, so now it's upside down, can you recognize it as the same thing? Some of you might be like, yeah, that's obvious. Some people, it's not obvious. They might be, I don't know. Could it be? Could it not be? If I turned it around, oh, now I don't know because we can't see the cap. What is it? If I hid it from you and then lined it up in a set of 5 water bottles, could you remember which one it is? If I told you, go to the store, find me the exact same water bottle in green, could you recognize it if it was in a different color? So that's what we talk about, or that's what we think about when we're talking about our visual analysis skills there. And then the last one here is our visual motor integration. So this is coordinating our visual system with our fine motor movements. Okay. So the big red flag here is poor writing, not the same thing as poor spelling. Poor writing is more so if I were to give you a blank piece of paper and I said, write a sentence. Could you write straight across? Would you write up all the way to the top? Would you end up writing down? Is the spacing between words variable? Is the spacing within a word itself variable? Do we have some letters that are squished together, some that are sort of sprawled out? Are we having bigger letters, smaller letters within the same word? That's what we think about when we're thinking about poor writing. Not necessarily illegible writing that we cannot speak to. Some people just like to scribble and don't like to write and take the time to do that, but that's time management, not vision therapy. Okay, any questions on our visual information processing disorders at all? Yes. More writing. Mm-hmm. Perfect. Any other questions? Yes. So that's a really interesting question. There's nothing out there that would say, I would say, study-wise, research-wise, that someone who's left-handed might make more of these errors, per se, but certainly that would be something interesting to have whoever out there does the research to look into. That's not me, but you are not the first person to say that to me. You are not the first, yes, but not to say that our right-handed kiddos can't also do these reversals, but certainly you're not the first sort of parent to say, well, my kid's left-handed. Is it just the way that they're writing that they... traditional writing, how we teach kiddos to write. Usually the teacher, whoever it is right-handed. More people population-wise are right-handed. So maybe it's just the way that we're teaching how to write, especially for our lefties out there. I think I saw another question back here. Oh, yes. I would, for the letter reversals, the laterality stuff, totally normal if they're 7. So that I would say that's not a red flag for us. We'll wait until he turns 8. If there's other things that are going on, because all of these things, yes, they can happen individually, but more often than not, we sort of see intertwining between a bunch of things. So if you do have some of these concerns, some of these things that are coming up to your head, then I would probably get them seen. Might as well rule it out if we can. And if it's there, then better earlier that we see them, earlier that we can sort of start treatment and training. Yes, and then... So if we're reading, seeing the numbers backwards, that would fall more into our visual analysis skills here. So the recognition of seeing them backwards, as well as sort of that combination of writing them backwards. And so how we train, like I said, there's like about 10 or 12 of these visual information processing disorders. And sort of in vision therapy or in our assessment, we try to go all through all 10 of them in order to really see what exactly it is that we're dealing with. And so in vision therapy, we have certain booklets that are specialized to look at each one of these 10. And then we also have other sort of games to work on the recognition, work on the memory stuff. So it's more peculiar than sort of a chart or flippers, but certainly we definitely have some activities, and we are working with someone right now that actually is just a visual information processing, nothing else going on. They just have a hard time recognizing those letters, recognizing those words, even if they're backwards. If they're all the right way, they can recognize them. If they're backwards, which you would think, well, why would it ever be backwards? But if they're backwards, they have no idea what they are. They couldn't tell you. And so that's what we're working on with them. Any other questions at all? Yes, in the back. With, and then some of it like blacks out a little bit. That I'm not too familiar with. We're going to touch on something at the end here, and then you can tell me if that is the same thing that we're thinking about. I'm not just too familiar with Ehlers syndrome that you're talking about right now. So sorry about that. I apologize. Any other questions at all? Yes. Yes. Absolutely. Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Anything else? Otherwise, we will power through here. So speaking of our eye turns, that is number 5 here, our strabismus. So this is a misalignment in the eyes causing an eye turn, also known as a wandering eye. We don't like to use wandering eye, but some people still do. We don't know where it's wandering, and so we just like to say that it's turning. So this eye turn can be inwards, it can be out, it can always involve the same eye, or it can alternate between the eyes, and then it can be there all the time, so constantly, or more so intermittently. Intermittent eye turns can range between, oh, it's there 10% of the time, to it's there 90% of the time. Anything over 90, we just call it constant because it's more likely there than not. When we think about our intermittent eye turns, though, there's two situations or two times it will definitely show itself. The first one is going to be if we're really sick, if we're ill, if we're not feeling well, that's when the eye turn is going to go out, it's going to go in, it's going to do its own thing. And then the second time is going to be if they're having a really good cry. For our really young ones, if they're having what's known as a tantrum, that is when the eye turn is really going to show itself, because at that point they do not care. There's no control of the eye. It's going to go out, it's going to go in. And even when it comes to being sick, being ill, they'll never be able to fake that with you. So pros and cons, right? When we look at this kiddo right here, very clear eye turn. That right eye is pointed straight ahead. The left eye is pointed inwards. Now, if this child gets sent to the ophthalmologist, the eye surgeon, that surgeon is going to say, whoa, we need to do surgery, right? That's the only option they have is surgery. And the surgeon may even say, oh, well, we better do it sooner rather than later, because if surgery isn't done by the time they turn 8, then there's no chance of recovery. Recovery being that the eye will never function properly again. You'll never have true binocular vision, both eyes working together. But as optometrists, we know that this isn't true. There's no evidence out there that suggests that surgery can't be successful after the age of 8. There is, however, a lot of evidence out there that says that doing vision therapy before and or after strabismus surgery, so eye turn surgery, can actually benefit and improve surgical outcomes for these children. So I'm not saying that surgery is never the option, but I'm just saying that for our eye turns, why not try something like vision therapy that could potentially correct the eye turn all on its own? It's non-invasive. And then even if we end up having to go that surgical route, that the child would benefit either way. So that's sort of just our pitch to say, you know, yes, we can cut, but we also don't always have to. Now, when we think about red flags or symptoms that this child may experience, the only one will be that the eye turns, that there is a misdirected eye. That is the only thing. And so as doctors, when you come in for your routine eye exam, that isn't necessarily looking at all of 6 of these binocular vision dysfunctions, that's what we're trying to find. Okay, this is that, you know, sore thumb that sticks out. This is that gross abnormality that hopefully we'll catch. But we also rely heavily on parents to tell us, is it turning? If it's that intermittent eye turn and we're not seeing it turn, maybe you're seeing it turn at home and we want to know that, okay? And so we might have you come back sooner so that hopefully one time when it is turning, we'll be able to see it too and sort of confirm that diagnosis there. But this child here will never see double, okay? You're going to be like, well, how are they not seeing double? Like, look at that eye. Like, it's all the way out there. How are they not seeing double? The brain is actively turning off or suppressing that left eye in this case here. So it's only using the right eye. It's shutting off any information, any vision, any visual acuity coming from that left eye. And so it's turning off. And so how do we train that in vision therapy? The first thing is what's called anti-suppression. Okay? So that brain is turning off in the previous picture, the left eye. So what we need to do is teach the brain that both eyes have the ability to turn on. Somebody with an alternating eye turn, so where the left eye might turn off, the right eye might turn off, it'll flip-flop like that. Someone with an alternating eye turn isn't necessarily going to have to learn this step because the brain already knows that both eyes can turn on. It just chooses which eye to turn off. Doesn't really matter. Sometimes it's more the right eye than the left eye. Who knows? Just does what it wants to do. And then the second point here is going to be fusion. So now that the brain has learned that both eyes can turn on, we want to teach the brain that both eyes can turn on, whoa, at the same time. Okay, that's crazy, but we can do it. So both eyes can turn on. Both eyes can turn on at the same time. That's fusion there. And then once the brain has learned both of those steps, then we go back through all of the previous things that we've talked about earlier today. We go through our eye movements, our focusing, our eye teaming, now that both eyes are on. Okay. Any questions on our eye turns? No. If that did not make sense, please raise your hand and I will try again. Otherwise, we will keep going. Alrighty, 3, 2, 1. Okay, lovely. So we have made it now to our number 6 here, our amblyopia. This is a decreased in visual acuity. Remember, visual acuity, our sight, how clearly we can see in one or both eyes. This can be caused by 3 different things. Number 1, strabismus. We've all mastered that. We know exactly what that is. That's our eye turn. The second type of cause could be a very high prescription in one eye or both eyes. And then the last one is our deprivation amblyopia, typically caused by a congenital cataract that we won't touch on too much here because, well, we don't need to talk about that because that unfortunately does require surgery and we don't want to talk about surgery today. Alrighty, so this is a quick demo here where as much as I've tried to sort of demonstrate what someone with amblyopia might experience here. Okay, so when I'm looking at this, we'll say that that is the left eye, nice and clear. We can see all those lovely balloons in the sky. We can see all the lovely borders, all the strings that are attached to them. Whereas the right eye here, blurrier. This is what I would call sort of a mild case of amblyopia in this sense here. So yeah, we can see all the colors. Those borders are a little bit blurry. We've sort of lost some of the detail from those strings there. And so if we can imagine our left eye there is, we'll look at our eye turn. The left eye there is the one that's pointed straight ahead. The right eye here is the one that's turning. Which one is the brain going to want to choose to look through? Of course, it's going to be that left eye, right? If we have a very high prescription in just the one eye, the right eye here in this case, which side is the brain going to want to choose to look through? The left eye, right? And so as the brain just keeps choosing that left eye, the right eye is going to start to get ignored. It's going to be turned off again. And if you don't use it, you lose it. A good thing here with vision therapy, just because it's lost does not mean it cannot be found again. And so the first thing that we're going to do is find the best prescription that's going to promote our binocular vision. Binocular vision, I'm going to keep saying it, 2 eyes working together, okay? I would just like to comment on some past treatments. We used to think of amblyopia and say, okay, we got to patch the eye. Patching is that.
Once again, the Manitoba Association of Christian Homeschools would like to thank the Learning House for sponsoring this recording. Please visit them at learninghouse.ca.